Listen and stream the all-new talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.
21 minutes after 8. Pretty tight schedule this morning. Interview after interview, but we'd rather have it any other way. As I said to you before we went to the break, we're discussing something that we've spoken about before. And that, of course, the Anthony N. Sabga Awards, Caribbean Excellence. With us, the three laureates. What I'll do is I'll introduce the gentleman who is going to be giving us all the information, and I'll give him the honor of telling us about the laureates this year, and then we'll be speaking to each of them individually. Let me welcome to our program a gentleman that I've known for a number of years. I haven't seen him in quite a while. It's nice to have you with us here in studio. Communication consultant at the Anthony N. Sabga Awards, Caribbean Excellence, Robert Clark. Robert, good morning to you.
Good morning, Satish, and thanks so much for having us this morning.
It's nice to have you. It's nice to see you after such a long time. And the discussion this morning is a pretty interesting one. There are people, we've been speaking about it before in the various years that we've done it, and the various laureates and everything else. This year is the first time that I've had the opportunity, the privilege of having them with us live, two in studio, one online, to discuss some of what's going on and some of what has contributed to them being bestowed this honor. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of the discussion and speaking to the laureates themselves, let's set a bit of groundwork, familiarize our listeners, those who may not necessarily know all that there is to know about this prestigious Caribbean Excellence Award. Tell us more about it.
So the Anthony N. Sabga Awards Caribbean Excellence was established in 2006. Mm-hmm. And since then, we have awarded some 54 exceptional Caribbean nationals in the fields of arts and letters, entrepreneurship, public and civic contributions, and science and technology. And this morning here in studio with us, we have Joanne C. Hillhouse, who is an author from Antigua and Barbuda, author and writer, and she'll tell you a little bit more about herself shortly, and Dr. Mahendra Prasad, who is a plant breeder and rice researcher in Guyana. He is the chief scientist at the Guyana Rice Development Board. And online, we have Dr. Adish Surju Singh, who is a women's health doctor and the director of women's health at the Ministry of Health in Trinidad and Tobago. So Joanne is our Arts and Letters laureate. She will receive her award, as will all the others, tomorrow in a gala ceremony at the Hilton Trinidad. $500,000 citation, an Anthony N. Sabga gold coin, as it has always been for these awards. And Dr. Prasad is our Science and Technology Laureate. And Dr. Surju Singh is our Public and Civic Contributions Laureate.
Ladies first, as we begin familiarizing and telling our listeners about the award ceremony, tell us a bit about yourself, some of the work that you've been involved in that has led to you being where you are at this point in time.
Well, I can't say definitively. Thank you, first of all, for having me. I can't say definitively what swayed the judges in my direction, but I am passionate about literary arts, and I've worked in literary arts independently as both a writer and an arts advocate. So that means that I'm writing my own things, both in book form. I have 8 books of fiction that I've published. I also write in media, and I've also formed a nonprofit called the Wadali Youth Pen Prize, which is focused on nurturing and showcasing literary arts in Antigua and Barbuda. I've worked with the Cushion Club, Reading Club for Children. I've worked with the schools, with my own independent workshop series, Johali Writing Project. I do a lot for the literary arts in Antigua and Barbuda, and to connect Antigua and Barbuda with the wider Caribbean. And I'm very grateful that Sabga thought it was fair to award me for my efforts.
Did you ever think, while doing what you do and what you love, that one day would result in an award like this?
No. This is totally off course, but it's a road that I'm very happy to take.
I've had the opportunity to visit Antigua. It's a beautiful place. And I know that from the Antiguans that I've dealt with, they're very, very hospitable people. Your work here, where does your inspiration come from for your books?
Life. I'm from Artes Antigua, and I always refer to myself as a girl from Artes Antigua, meaning that everything that I, wherever I go in the world, I take the foundation that was poured into me in Artes Antigua with me. And that is a whole bunch of things, from our language, our vernacular, to our calypso, to our food, to everything that makes us us, is what inspires me. Our people inspire me.
What would you say is your biggest success to date?
This?
Yeah.
This, definitely. This is the biggest award that I've ever received.
What message do you think it sends to the people who know your work and to the younger ones back in Antigua that you may now be more than just a role model to?
Well, I mean, we don't work, if you work in the arts, you don't work for awards, right? You work because of the work. But what I think stuff like, initiatives like Anthony and Sabga Awards do is it reminds that the work has value and that there's potential to, when I look at the former laureates and hopefully myself and the others this year, it's the potential to be change agents in the region going forward.
Okay, let's move on. We have another laureate with us, Dr. Mahendra Prasad. Good morning to you. Welcome to our program.
Thank you very much.
Nice to have you with us here this morning. Plant scientist and rice breeder. That sounds pretty interesting. Mm. Tell us about this field.
It's actually interesting. It's quite exciting, more or less. My job entails developing new varieties of rice for our farmers to increase production, overall productivity, pest and disease resistance, better quality, and so on and so forth. So it's just to increase, at the end of the day, the profitability and the livelihood of farmers on all in the value-added chain.
That's interesting. I look at a lot of these videos you have online with all kinds of things, and interestingly enough, a sushi video taught me that there were 90 varieties of rice at that point. And I don't know how many we have now, but when it comes to the rice varieties that they use for sushi, it's varied. And then, no, I didn't realize all of it is brown rice and white rice in Trinidad and Tobago. No, and then you might get a jasmine and a basmati, but that's the end of that. Mm-hmm. But for the listener, how many varieties of rice, and do you create new varieties? How does it work?
Yes, we create new varieties. The key thing is, okay, if we want to increase our production, higher level yield, right, we'll have genetic material from different parts of the world, and we combine our own stuff at a genetic level, even though it's a conventional process. So yes, we develop our own varieties. So far we have developed around 16 varieties of rice in Guyana. I'm happy to be part of almost all of them in Guyana, almost. Yes, starting out of that 16 I'm part of. And what these varieties do, they have increased our production from around 4 tons per hectare or even less. Now our national average around 6 tons per hectare. So it's a difference between if our industry stay or go. And this is profits for the farmers. And where we go, you're talking about jasmine and sushi. And so yeah, we are down the line to develop aromatic rice too. And in coming in a year or two, we are going to release for our farmers a new aromatic rice for in this part of the world. So that's quite exciting. And while I'm talking about that,
right,
before I'm going to tell you also, as we were speaking, as was promised, we're working of zinc in rice varieties, and so far we have now one candidate variety being tested in farmers' field. And I haven't done this all alone. We have partners, and it's a team effort.
I am always fascinated at the advancements when it comes to Guyana and agriculture. There is a perception that was had at one point in time that Guyana may have been a step or two behind others. But when you see now the results of all the groundwork that was taking place silently, apparently, and behind the scenes and not necessarily in the glare of the public, Guyana's reaping the rewards. I saw Guyana reaping some soya. They're into soya in a big way and some other things that it's really commendable. It really is. And it sets Guyana on a stage to become more than just, well, energy is one thing, but when it comes to agriculture, a real powerhouse. I mean, we've had discussions on a regional level with Guyana being a main player in food production with Barbados and Trinidad and Tobago, and I think it was Suriname or some other one. Four of them came together. These things that you're saying about rice are amazing to me, Because as I said, the average individual does not think that there are all of these opportunities, for want of a different term, in planting rice.
And I can tell you as well, Satish, that we have traveled for video production with all our laureates. And when we went to Guyana, we went out to the rice fields in Baibu, we saw farmers and we heard farmers telling us that their yields have gone up so significantly. It has a real impact on their livelihoods, their ability to earn a livelihood, whether they were sort of at the threshold of profitability at one point in time. And due to the work of Dr. Passad, and you will always say, him and his team, they are now able to earn a much better living.
Mm. So, what prompted you to get involved in this sphere?
I think I was born in this. I think at an early age, we grew up in an agriculture settings.
Right.
And I've done my studies in agriculture. I went on to do my, well, after BSc, I started to work at a rice resource station and got involved in rice breeding.
Mm-hmm.
And it clicked, you know, things came naturally. I went on, got a scholarship to do my master's and PhD in India and came back. And it's a passion that's within me that drives me, even when I'm alone, to work, to do this.
I'll ask you the same question that I asked our other guest here about your greatest achievement.
I think it's still to come. But
okay.
This is the pinnacle of what I think I could have achieved. For me, a recognition and a recognition of this magnitude is not only welcome, it's really needed, not for me, for fellow researchers and persons who are advancing work with very little resources. This gives everyone a hope, you know, to push the limits beyond with very little resources. That anything, once there is a will, there is a way. You can achieve anything in this part of the world.
You spoke about your for want of a different name, being born into agriculture, being exposed to it your entire life, so you understand and appreciate what agriculture is and the possibilities that exist. Here at home in Trinidad, we have a love-hate relationship with agriculture, in that we know we need it, but we don't do enough to support it. And that's across the board. It's been so for decades, and now we have a food import bill that's crossed $5 billion and counting. And we still don't seem to be paying the kind of attention that we need to agriculture. That seems to be vastly different in Guyana. Whereas from the people that I know from Guyana, agriculture has always been very, very integral to their existence. And I'm not trying to put you on a spot here, but if we were to give advice to the farmers, to the people in Trinidad and Tobago who are thinking of agriculture, because we've had discussions just yesterday, we spoke about that as well. Is agriculture something people should consider?
Absolutely sure. And the thing is, in Guyana, we have the mechanism in place. We have good policy at the administrative level, regardless who the politicians are.
Mm-hmm.
They have good policy in place to support agriculture, and they have support a good research effort. I've seen there a lot in Trinidad now. There's advancement in terms of the thinking and for increasing food production. As we speak, we are working together to have some rice varieties coming over here and for the farmers and so. So locally here, I think you're starting on the right track too.
Mm-hmm. And of course, our third laureate with us this morning, he's no stranger to our program. We've spoken to him on more than one occasion, on more than one topic. And of course, we are here this morning to congratulate him on being awarded for his work in women's health, and that is the Director of Women's Health at the Ministry of Health, Trinidad and Tobago, Dr. Adesh Sergesing. Good morning. Welcome back to our program.
Good morning, Satish, and thank you so much.
It's nice to have you here this morning to speak about this accolade and this achievement, the award, the Anthony Sabga Award. I remember when the announcement was first made, I congratulated you. And I had said to you that it was a fitting tribute because of the discussions that we've had. And because of what you said to us, you were able to achieve in women's health. And that recognition now has been formalized with this award being given to you. What does it mean to you, getting this award?
So thanks again, Satish. So before I begin, I must say congratulations to my fellow laureates, Ms. Joanne Hillhouse and Dr. Mahendra Prasad. I'll be meeting them physically shortly. So it's really lovely to hear them speak and all of the great work they have done. In terms of what this award means to me, of course, as you said, it's a, really a validation by an external agency who would have looked at your careers and went into details of your CVs and the work that you've done and recognized that, of course, success is always a byproduct of the work you do. But to get that recognition is important, not just for me, but, you know, I always say I work with so many teams, so many specialists, so many people behind the scenes. So they are all so proud of what, you know, what this achievement means to me and to them as well.
I remember clearly the interview we held where you spoke to us about your efforts and your successes in reducing maternal mortality rates in this country. And at one point in time, that was a real issue for us. Those stories would have been making the front page of the news all the time, and we would have had the horror stories of persons being traumatized even before they went into the hospital, not knowing what to expect. And we've not heard, we've not seen much of that for a long period of time. And that's obviously as a result of the efforts that you've put into that direction. Now, the obvious question would be, well, Doc, how you managed to do that?
Yeah. So that's actually a difficult question. I can't put my actual finger on what was the only thing that we did. It's a lot of things that I would say had to be done because we were putting a lot of resources. We put the money in. We have so many trained individuals. We have fairly respectable units. They're all well equipped and so on. So it's a combination of marshalling the troops and following through on those policies and protocols, which I had to develop some of them de novo. Lots of things that would have targeted things. So, for example, let's take a hemorrhage. Maternal hemorrhage is the number one cause and contributor to mortality and morbidity in the world and in the Caribbean. But for the last few years, that's almost unheard of in Trinidad and Tobago because of those systems that we put in place. We do dress rehearsals. I make the teams actually film it, send me recordings. I congratulate them. I give them positive reinforcement. We put new drugs, we put all the newest things. And this has been recognized, as you realize, through the Pan American Health Organization and the World Health Organization, the work we did, that they are now using us to help the rest of the Caribbean, the South Americans, and they put us on actually on a committee all the way at the World Health Organization. So it's tremendous work, a lot's been done. And Trinidad and Tobago has been one of the few countries in the Caribbean to already achieve the Sustainable Development Goal targets for the year 2030 for maternal and newborn outcomes. And we are continuing to hope to get better and better each day.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this. I had the opportunity recently to experience firsthand, well, not me personally, I didn't deliver the child, but my significant other, but the hospital and all that happens. And I came back on the air and I told people that I was as apprehensive as anybody else having to deal with the public sector, but I was pleasantly surprised. And I am probably one of the harshest critics you can find anywhere when it comes to public service, but it was transformative. You could tell that there was a drive to ensure that patient care was taken to another level in the public health sector when it came to maternity. The nurses, the doctors, it was totally, totally eye-opening as to how on hands they were and how proactive and involved they were in not just the procedures, but the well-being of the patient. And not just my significant, but everybody who was there. And that speaks to a lot more than just the procedures being addressed, because we've had horror stories as well, persons not being too pleased with the treatment they get. It was for the public service. It was a real, real, real good experience, at least from what I was able to experience with it. You've been involved in some other elements of our public health sector as well, and involved in the transformation of the Sangre Grande Hospital. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, Sure. So I was actually in charge of there for the time period 2009 to 2017. And I inherited a really good team. Great work had been done already by my my predecessor, Dr. Dale Hazrano, who was a classmate of mine as well. So we have the same, you know, mind. What I did was add additional resources, more protocols and all of the other things, especially focusing on maternity and newborn services. And what happened there again, and you mentioned it, it's really an endorsement. We preached respectful care of patients, treating people like people at all stages. How would you like to be treated? We are Trinidadians, we are Caribbean, we are homegrown. We have a responsibility to our families, our country. Our countries have put a lot into us to get us here, all of the laureates. You know, we may have had training and exposures abroad, but, you know, and again, this is coming back to this award, it recognizes inside of the Caribbean these homegrown persons who have a lot to give. We tend to look at those, you know, the trainees and the foreign, where we go off abroad in USA and we reach to some high position, we make the front pages. But right in front of us, lots of us are around. And so to us at Grandi Hospital, we had such lovely teams. And this is across, I speak a lot about the maternity and newborn services. We've done a lot of great work there. And that work is helping to be a model for the other areas of the healthcare systems, which we are trying to improve. There's a lot of work to be done throughout the system, as you quite rightly said. But at least in maternity and newborn services, we've done a lot of great work. And if you go to the San Grande Hospital, you'll see that there's also, they were pioneers in a digital medical clinical system I started there, which is now across Trinidad and Tobago. So you can have health records digital. You can get your records. There's no longer lost notes. You can get research done. Target interventions based on data. Use the limited resources to target the problems, not from the textbooks in the foreign populations, but from our local population.
Where do we rank now as a nation in terms of maternal mortality?
Oh, that's a... Actually, if you go to the, there's a site that has all of the agencies, the WHO, World Bank, and so on. So for the very first time, just a few months ago, they published data that they would have gone into and interrogated throughout the entire world. And Trinidad and Tobago ranks very well. As I said before, we have achieved those SDG targets. Now, unfortunately, people die. There's some of them are not preventable. We are targeting, first and foremost, things that we could do to prevent deaths. Mm. Sometimes it could be, even before pregnancy, as we talked sometimes in the past, try to make people healthier before they become pregnant. Sometimes family planning is important to prevent that ill person becoming pregnant and becoming a statistic. But for this last year, we had just two maternal deaths, both of which were unfortunately not preventable. And for this year so far, we're doing exceedingly well again. No, there are zero maternal deaths. And again, we want to keep this going. Similarly with neonatal, that's newborns in the first 28 days, we have achieved international status and international targets again. It's for that 1,000 live births. And unfortunately, a significant percentage of those 6 per 1,000 births not preventable cases like extreme prematurity, and sometimes babies are born with abnormalities and so. But, you know, we continue to push those boundaries. We haven't stopped working.
Let's take a couple of quick messages, and when we get back, we continue our discussion right here on Freedom 106.5 FM. Stay with us.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
It's about 11 minutes before 9. Drop the curtains at 9. Govind Altar, he's already here, peeping in the studio somewhere. He should be in with you all at 9. We've got our laureates with us here this morning. It's been pretty interesting finding out from all three of you the various fields that you come from. And having, of course, the intimate relationship that Guardian Media has with the awards ceremony, we often feature the laureates and everything else, the fields that they come from. It's vast, and it covers so much that it tells you that you can never really predict who the next laureate is going to be. And this is I'm sure I'm correct in saying this, akin to the regional Nobel Prize. That's the stature. And I remember in 2006, all the accolades that was placed on this at that point in time. And since then, the work done to raise the stature of the award. To all three of you receiving the award this year, the messages that this should send to the general population within the region is what? Let's begin. Ladies first again.
One, that we have real talent, real potential, and real possibility in the region. I think something that has come out of the conversation this morning is that these are not years of service or lifetime achievement awards. We are still active in our fields, still producing and still striving. And it's about being, as I said, change makers. So what this does is boost us to continue the work. And I think that is an important takeaway. If you're someone working in a field that you're passionate about anywhere in the region, there's someone who is seeing it, benefiting from it. And well, first of all, your community. It shouldn't be about the award. It should be about what you're passionate about. It should be about serving your community. But call this a little broader, a little extra gravy on it to encourage the work and to hopefully, in doing the work, continue to transform our region.
Yeah. And Dr. Prasad.
Well, honestly, this recognition is a powerful reminder of the importance of investing in science and technology per se, as it gives the researcher and innovators, those watching, hope that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and noting that we are operating in a resource poor environment across the Caribbean, this is quite huge. Compared to Nobel Prize, I think it's bigger, because in many cases, my friends across the world have all the resources and all the facilities that you can ask for to conduct these types of research and so on. We have to battle with little that we have. And to reach this far, I think it's quite an achievement for all of us.
Ditto for the arts, especially so.
And Dr. Sergio Singh, your take on the message that this awards, and this accolade sends to the region.
So, I mean, again, it's an endorsement of the work we have done. Again, my colleagues throughout the Caribbean, my medical colleagues, we have a group from we graduated the class of 1990, some 33 years ago. And they're all sending all these messages, congratulatory messages, and gives me the opportunity to collaborate with them.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of work to do. I don't want to say with the words Miss Hillhouse is the best of the in terms of the orator in the three of us, and she said it so well. I have a lot more work to do. I'm working on a lot of things, and this gives me the impetus to work on intimate partner violence. We have work to do on this digital health records, respectful maternity care, eliminating cervical cancer. The list goes on. There's so much more to be done. So I've started work, and it helps those who are mentoring to continue this work.
And as we wrap up, congratulations to all three of you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It has been a most interesting discussion, finding out about you all and what you're involved in. The awards, yes. You know, the awards is one element of it, but the contribution that you all make to your own societies, to the region, and to the fields that you're all involved in, it's contributions that have been well acknowledged, and these awards are testimony to that. Robert, tell us a bit more about this actual event where the awards will be bestowed and all those things.
So the event, as always, is a gala ceremony. Well, for the past couple of years of the pandemic, it was split up, so we had to go to each laureate's home country. But this year, we bringing two laureates in from outside, Joanne and Mahendra, and Dr. Sergio Singh, of course, will be there as well. And we will have a gala ceremony at the Hilton Hotel, attended by about 200 people. And there will be speeches, there will be videos, there will be remarks, and of course, there will be the presentation, the crowning moment of the evening. And I wanted to just say that the founder of the awards, the late Dr. Anthony N. Sabga, this is what he envisioned, identifying Caribbean exceptionalism and recognizing it and supporting it. And I think he would have been pleased to know that there are Caribbean commonalities and that we are recognizing work that uplifts the region.
I've, in my career, had the opportunity to speak to him on one or two occasions. And many times, you can learn so much from people just by listening to their life experiences. And he was definitely one of those who had so many stories to share. And he was willing to share them with anyone and everyone. And the conversations were candid, as he is, but they were always so insightful. And he always did have this drive to promote and reward success. And you can tell that from this. His legacy lives on, is going to be living on for a long, long time. That's for sure.
An immigrant who strove for excellence himself.
Yeah, definitely. I want to thank and congratulate all three of you again for this achievement. It was my pleasure being with you and interviewing and sharing your story with all of our listeners. We have a wide listenership across the globe. So definitely there's a lot for us to consider. As we mull over who our laureates going to be next year, we can never tell where they come from. Thank you all for being with us in studio.
Thank you so much, Satish. And if I could just say, answercaribbeanawards.com. That's our website. You can check it out. And the Anthony N. Sabga Awards Caribbean Excellence on Facebook.
And this is where we drop the curtains on this edition of our interview and this edition of our show.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.